Welcome back to the Terminal Exchange, the official podcast of Nussbaum Transportation. I'm here with Mike Spitzer, Nussbaum driver and professional chef for 18 years, cooked meals for the president, multiple presidents, people of Congress, and he sold a cake recipe for $10,000 once. So this man knows cooking and he knows what it's like to be a chef and to drive over the road. So we're here talking about his journey through that and coming to Nussbaum. I'm excited. So Mike, thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me.
So this is something that you've done podcasts before?
A couple of tech podcasts.
Okay.
Yeah.
Did I get your bio right? You were a chef.
I was a chef for about 18 years. Yeah.
For a long stint of that at Vail Resorts.
Vail, and mainly hotels and like major hotels.
Yeah.
Like the Intercontinental in downtown Kansas City, the Raphael in Kansas City, and then all over America, hopping hotel to hotel.
Yeah.
High end restaurant.
Yeah. And as we were talking, Mike has a lot of cool tattoos, and he was showing me them. He's talking about one of them was a koi fish swimming upstream and talking about how the meaning behind that is finding your purpose in life and trying to figure out what you're right.
Yeah, the koi fish swimming upstream resembles fighting the current of life. You're not too sure on what you're wanting to do in life yet.
Yeah.
And you're trying to find your current.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think my hope is with this that as we talk about that and that people could apply this to you as you're listening. There's people, a lot of drivers at Nussbaum that have changed careers, truck drivers in general, like you jump into new industry. So we're going to talk about that with you going from being a chef to making a hard transition to being a driver over the road.
Yeah.
And what that was like. So before we do that, let's do some icebreakers. I have some the chef little game to play.
Oh yeah.
It's called or bleh. All right, you ready?
Let's go.
First one, ranch on pizza.
I love ranch on pizza.
It's a good one. Okay. Breaking pasta before boiling.
You would break my heart if you broke pasta. Like you would break my wee little heart.
Oh, do you like cooking pasta?
I love cooking pasta. If you break it in front of me, I will shed a single tear.
Oh no. ketchup on steak. Or bleh?
Bleh.
Oh. Do you put anything on a steak? Just salt, pep?
Being a chef, we were trained that you never take away the flavor of the steak. And if you have to add anything to it, your steak is overcooked and you shouldn't be eating a steak.
Okay. And what's the acceptable temperature?
For me, I eat them blue. Like, that's still basically raw. But medium rare is about the most I'll ever take it. Yeah.
Okay. Powdered Parmesan or fresh?
It depends. Depends on the situation.
Okay. Sometimes the powder.
If I'm eating some like my mama made spaghetti at home, like childhood style, I want the powdered Kraft Parmesan. Right. That's what I grew up on.
Yeah.
But if I'm paying a lot of money, I want the fresh.
The real stuff.
Yeah.
Okay. And I think you've already answered.
Oh, the well done steak.
Well done steak. Is this or bleh?
That is bleh. But my wife, she loves a well done steak.
A little crunchy.
Our joke is she likes a well-done steak with a round of applause. She likes it extra well-done.
Okay.
And I'm like, cool. It is what it is. But as a chef, I'll cook anything the way you want it because my end of the day is to make the person happy.
Yeah. You got the widest spread there. She likes it.
Yeah. And I like
black.
Mine,
you like
mine
blue.
Basic raw. Yeah.
Oh, man. So let's start here on your journey. And that began with, you said you grew up in the kitchen. What does that mean? You grew up in the kitchen and you grew up around trucking. And walk me through your story. You had a stint in military and then becoming a chef. So what would that look like?
So my grandma and grandpa owned restaurants growing up. And then, you know, we lost them due to financial situations and stuff. But I grew up in an Italian household. and food was everything. And we used to have like Sunday dinners. Everyone would cook, you know, all that stuff. We'd all hang out. That's why we bonded and all that stuff. So I ended up falling in love with cooking because my grandma, I call Nana, would tell me that a man that can't cook is a useless man. And every man should know how to cook, not just for himself, but for his wife, for his kids, because it's not always, always the woman's job to take care of all that. And you can't live off a microwave the rest of your life. So
this is true.
I always had that mentality, and she started teaching me to cook when I was, I would say, 6, 7 years old. She taught me how. My first thing I ever made was mashed potatoes because she made me in charge for like Thanksgiving dinner, and then it kind of just grew from there and went up. I started working in like TGI Fridays as a young kid, like in my younger years, and all that other stuff. I was a line cook. And trucking wise, I grew up around it. My mom's ex-boyfriend, God rest his soul, he's passed away like 3 years ago now.
I'm sorry.
He was a great guy. He was a heavy hauler, and he did like the low bed heavy haul, like big bulldozers, all that stuff. And that's where I literally learned to drive a truck, was in a stub-nosed Peterbilt that had the twin gears, so I had the two sticks. And that's why I literally fell in love with trucking on that with Joe. And then
taught you.
Yeah, he taught me. He's cool. Taking me to work every Saturday with him. And we would go to like, this is California. We'd go to like Folsom, Pennsylvania, you know, Folsom, Placerville, down to San Francisco, hauling like oversized bulldozers down the highway. And the looks that you'd get from people going down the highway of like, here comes this big, giant, multi-million-dollar bulldozer on the back of a truck.
Yeah.
And you're literally going with pilot cars and everything like that. So I literally fell in love with trucking then. And then life took its course, and I fell into hard times as a troubled youth and got offered a deal to go in the military and went in the military.
And this is the Army?
The Army. On the Army. Went to Iraq for 9 months, came home, went to Afghanistan for a year and a half, and then transitioned out after that.
And did you start cooking in the military? Were you doing cooking in the military?
I started cooking before, like in my youth and stuff like that. I was always cooking, and then in the military I would still cook for people.
Yeah,
but the joke would be like cook military style, like I would use like burners and stuff like that we can get, and I became like the chef of like my barracks and all that stuff. And then when I got out, I was missing that structure in the military, so I went to culinary school, graduated top of my class.
Wow. So let's stop for a second. And so coming out of the military, you were missing that structure. And then was it an obvious decision to go into culinary? Did that make sense to you?
It wasn't. At first, I was going to try tech. I was going to try like computers and stuff like that because I'm really good at that. But then like I noticed I was really missing the structure. Like I thrive off structure, knowing day in and day out what I'm going to be doing. I even do that here at Nussbaum. Like, poor Crystal. I missed it, and then my grandma was alive at the time, and we talked, and she's like, "Why don't you go back to cooking? You like cooking?" Because I was having a hard time finding my place after the military, and I was like, "Cool." So I went to Le Cordon Bleu. I literally graduated top of my class. Started teaching normal day people how to cook while I was in culinary school because I was really good at it.
Right. Is that Cordon? You said you went to Cordon Bleu. Is that in
San Francisco?
San Francisco. Okay, cool. Big school, right?
Oh, big school.
Yeah,
big school. I did that. Graduated top of my class, and I met a couple good friends there, and we're still friends to this day. But then after that, I literally just started throwing myself to the wolves and started off as a dishwasher, a line cook, whatever I did. At one point, I was working in San Francisco. Barely scraping by. I was paying $2,700 a month for a studio apartment with no bathroom in it.
Whoa.
Bathroom was on the hall. And I just sacrificed everything for cooking. And that was it. And then,
Yeah, so let's talk about your career within culinary. Mm-hmm. And there were some pretty notable things.
Oh, a lot of notable things.
We've had other chefs come the Nussbaum with previous careers. None of them have ever cooked for the president.
Oh, yeah.
So talk to me. Who were the different people that you served in your time at culinary?
So my time in culinary, who have I cooked for? I've cooked for all of the Senate. I've cooked for all of Congress. I cooked for the Obama family.
By all of Congress, what do you mean?
Every House of Representative member, like everyone in Congress.
Isn't that like
a lot of
100
people?
100 and yeah. something, 180 or?
Yeah, it's like 180 some people, something like that. Same thing for the Senate. I've cooked for like the Obama family. Movie stars, I've cooked for like Mel Gibson.
Is there any like special protection if you're cooking for
like the president?
Obama, yeah, a president.
Oh, yeah.
Is there like a taste test?
Secret Service is that watching you at
every time.
Yeah. Yeah, Secret Service members stand at the end of the line and watch everything you do.
Sure.
Wherever your hands are going, if you're going to the bathroom, there's a Secret Service member walking like right behind you.
Wow.
You can't go to the bathroom with the door closed. It has to be open.
Really? Yeah.
They watch every little thing you do because you're cooking for the president.
Right, yeah.
He's a high political figure, and he's not liked by many.
Yeah.
So it's nerve-wracking. They check your ID every day. You're pat down every day.
Yeah.
They check your knife rolls, your bags, yeah. all that stuff. They pre-check all the food, all that stuff.
Did you cook for multiple presidents?
I cooked for Obama came through, and then when Obama was there, the Clinton family came through. Then I cooked for Arnold Schwarzenegger when he was a governor. That was entertaining.
Did you ever get to meet him,
Arnold? No. I know you don't ever get to meet them. You never ever get to meet them.
Sure.
You know who you're cooking for because they tell you who you're cooking for. Because you're like, why is this guy in a suit staring at me? And you're like, well, it's the president. And you're like, oh, that makes a lot of sense. You never get to meet him. It's a security thing. And most right. of the time when they were there, they're kind of like on a vacation / conference meeting / situation. So yep. you can't be touching anything.
And I don't know if we've mentioned this yet. So this was Vail Resorts is what most of this cooking was through.
Yeah. Vail Resorts and then Delaware North when they used to own Yosemite National Park.
Mm-hmm.
They don't own Yosemite National Park anymore. Yeah.
So then a lot of these people, retreats, conferences, venues like that, important meetings, et cetera. So Arnold Schwarzenegger, what did he order?
Arnold ordered salmon, like well-done salmon. I was like, okay, that's disgusting, but you know you're paying for it, not me. And then like a rice pilaf. That was literally it, like the most bland thing I've ever done in my life. And I'm like, well, you know what? He's a bodybuilder that still eats like a bodybuilder. Like, I can't be mad about it. But I've had some weird requests. I have had some,
really?
Yeah.
Yeah. What type of stuff?
Let's think. I've had someone that wanted me to cook a steak without cutting it, half well done, half rare. I want you to explain how you can do that one to me. I had to tell a Congress member, no, I could not do that. Because they wanted to share the steak with their wife, but they didn't want me to cut it because it loses flavor. And I was like, I can't cook half of it well done and half of it rare. That's scientifically impossible.
Well, you couldn't at least try to bend the laws of
physics
and nature?
No, that's not gonna happen. I know my skill level, and that's... I'm not a wizard.
When you're doing this, is it you amongst several other chefs working? How does that all work together?
So when that happens, they take all the best chefs of the resort and all that stuff, and they pick them, and that's who cooks. So they know everyone's getting high quality, and all of us specialized in certain things.
Mm-hmm.
We had a baker. Her name is Jenny. She did really well. She's like chocolatier style.
Mm-hmm.
And then like I did mainly pastas and Italian style food and like Latin.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And my other friend did like steaks and barbecue and all this stuff. And then I had a friend did soups and sauces. But mainly mine was Latin food and Italian food. I specialize in like pastas and Mexican food.
Yeah. Do you make the pasta?
I make the pasta from scratch.
You got
it by hand.
If you're a professional.
Yeah. If they're paying a lot of money, they're not getting boxed noodles.
And do you have to prepare that like the day before?
So noodles are always, best way to explain it, depending on the noodle, you never prepare it the day before. You just got to get it dry enough to cook, right? So pasta was normally made maybe like 4 hours, 5 hours before service because you don't want it too dry, but yet you don't want it too much moisture. Mm. So you just let it hang out for 4 hours, and then you just kind of make it as it came through.
Yeah, that's really cool. Do you have, what's the most memorable meal that you made for a celebrity or, mention the president or?
So the most memorable meal I've ever made in my entire career for anybody notable, I cooked for some rich CEO out of Mexico City. Don't ask me to pronounce his name, but he wanted me to do, I don't know if you ever, it's like scientific food, right? So I had to make edible paper and foam. Everything on the plate had to be edible besides the plate itself. So everything, the decoration. So I made like a far gua foam. So I made far gua, which is goose liver, and I made it into a foam. Like it looked like bubble bath.
Whoa.
Like a cloud. I did that with a bone, roasted bone marrow. So like you took a beef bone and you cut it in the middle and then you roast that off and that's the meal. Mm-hmm. With that. Then I made carrots or roots, vegetables into like flowers and stuff. Hmm. He wanted it over the top and I'm like, you're paying for it, dude. Whatever. So I made root vegetables into like flowers and different birds and animals. I literally sat there with a paring knife and like would cut it out. And that was the meal. And I remember him paying, I think it was like $800 a plate. And then he tipped the whole entire restaurant staff like $200,
$300.
Wow. Yeah. And yeah. I was like, all right, cool. I'm just going to roll with it. But that I've never made anything like that. Yeah. I had to call some friends. I'm like, how do I make foam out of goose liver? It's not my thing. So I called one of my friends who that's like his specialty, that he loves that stuff. And I was like, cool, man. Like,
tell me
how to do it. And he told me, and I was like, that's a lot of work. And he goes, yeah, it's a lot of work, but it comes out cool. And I was like, okay, man, let's roll with it.
So how much time goes into a meal like that?
I prepared that one for 3 days.
Whoa.
Yeah. Yeah. For one dinner, I had to prepare that for 3 days.
Yeah.
Three or four of us worked on it.
Yeah. That's really cool to see the end product come out. I'm like, this is really awesome to see.
Yeah, he was just a guy with a lot of money that wanted something fancy.
Sure.
And that was common.
And these are different places around the world. So part of your job at Vail,
it was a traveling chef.
You would travel to different places specifically for these events, or how often would you travel?
So I would travel every 5 months.
Okay.
So I'd work in a resort for 5 months and they'd be like, cool, season's coming to an end. Now you got to go to, you're going to take a month off, because the whole 5 months that I was there, I didn't have, didn't have a day off. I'd have one day off to like wash clothes, do what I got to do, grocery shop for myself, which I just ate at work. And then, so for 5 months you work, you get a full 30 days off, and then they tell you, hey, you're going to this resort. Cool. You got to open this resort. And you go out before anyone else gets there, before anyone's hired, any staff. You talk with the executive chef there all the time or whatever. Or the food and beverage director, you come up with the menu and the goal for the season and stuff like that. And then you go, and then it just rinse, repeat. Mm-hmm. So you go to like ski resorts for the winter.
Sure.
You go to like mountain resorts during the summer and you kind of just hop back and forth. And Vail owns like 90% of their ski resorts and resorts in the world.
Yep.
And so I've been to like Amsterdam. I've been to like all over Canada, all over Central America. All over America, all over Europe, all over Asia, Australia. They own everything. I'm like, well, I didn't know this.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it was
something.
It was entertaining.
You probably didn't imagine yourself.
Never imagined myself doing that.
How was the lifestyle when
hectic
getting into that?
Hectic. Yeah. You live in employee housing, so Vail will pay for your rent. They pay for all that stuff, and that's cool. Mm. Not mad about it. But your family can't stay with you. If you have kids, they can't come.
And you had a family at the time.
Had a son.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hmm. And I couldn't have him. And that's usually, that literally was the reason that I left working for Vail, was because of my son.
Sure. Yeah, that's tough. So tell me about those meals that you've had across the world. You've had great food from the people around you, but then also the different countries. So what were some of those?
So Mexico City, the street food in Mexico City. It's the first place I ever had lengua tacos.
Tongue
tacos. First place, made by some lady that was making tortillas from scratch to order right there in front of you. I didn't know what I ordered. I had a friend there that told me to order lengua. I didn't know what lengua was at the time. And it probably was one of the best things I've ever eaten in my entire life, which really kicked off my love for Latin, Latin food. Yeah.
Yeah.
I freaking love Mexican food so much, like real Mexican food. Oh, I... street tacos. I will never turn down a taco. Like, never. Or elotes, Mexican street corn. I will never turn it down. I am all for the birria. I'm all for the, like, carne asada. Like, oh, God, so good. Now I want to order tacos.
Yeah, I'm feeling tacos.
There's actually a really good... I ordered some really good tacos one time I was here.
Oh, like, what was
from your, DoorDash. I couldn't remember.
Tony's?
I couldn't tell you. I can't remember the place.
Okay.
When the person called me, told me they're out of something, they couldn't barely speak English. And I was like, cool, just I know my tacos are about to be really good.
That's awesome. All right, well, before we move on, there's still a couple questions I have about your culinary experience. So is there any dish that you refuse to make?
Ooh. Oh, yeah, there's a couple. There is a couple. So as funny as this sounds, if you don't let me bake macaroni and cheese, I will not make it. I refuse to make it. You have to let me bake the macaroni and cheese or I will not touch it. And I won't cook horse.
I respect that.
I've literally had an order for horse before and I was like, I'm not doing this. I'm not doing this.
It's like, what do you
do? It just feels weird.
Can you buy horse? Like, yeah. Is that something on the market?
And in Quebec and Canada, it's a delicacy in Quebec.
Yeah.
It's actually really greasy. It's disgusting.
Yeah. Ugh. I wouldn't want to eat it.
No. It's pretty good. It's pretty grody.
Yeah.
I'm not a fan of it.
Yeah. And pulling some life lessons from what you've done, I wanted to ask, what's one of the biggest lessons you learned from cooking for a president or some of these high-profile people? I'm sure there's some stress that goes into this, some thinking on the spot, some creativity. What's a lesson that we could take home from this about what you learned from cooking for the president?
When you're feeling overwhelmed, always take time to stop, breathe, and think, because as soon as you start getting too caught up in emotions and being stressed out, it's when most problems and errors happen. And you'll make the situation a lot worse if you don't step back, recompose yourself, and try to get your head around the situation. Understand there's going to be things that are out of your control that you just got to try to push through.
Sure. Yeah. When they're like, turn this into goose liver.
Yeah, it did get some weird, and you're like, you know what? I can give it a shot. Well, you know what? At the end of the day, you tried. Mm-hmm. And that's all that can matter. You're going to fail. You're going to stumble a lot.
Right.
And it's okay to fail. In the culinary world, we failed all the time. And at the end of the day, it's okay to fail. You just got to accept it. Learn from your failures.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you feel like the culinary school prepared you for a lot of what you got into?
I had some great culinary school chefs that taught me into it, but a lot of it came on the fly.
Yeah.
Having to actually step in a kitchen and fail.
Yeah.
Like, and just get in the dirt and just learn on the fly.
Sure.
Yeah.
And then so you spent time at Vail Resorts and a couple other places too. Is that right?
Yeah, Delaware World North, and then I traveled around to like IHG hotels and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, IHG owns like Marriott's and stuff like that. Yeah.
Okay, and what were the time frames on some of that stuff?
So before coming to Nussbaum, I worked like maybe like a year or two before coming to Nussbaum. I worked at the Raphael Hotel in Kansas City, which is a very high end hotel. I mean, I worked at Intercontinental in Kansas City before coming to New Small. Mm-hmm. But then I also worked for Amazon at the same time. Well, that was a story.
As a chef?
No, as a delivery driver.
Cool. That's great.
Yeah, I realized there was not enough money in the culinary.
Yeah, room, right.
I was at work all the time. Yeah, and I was missing out my family.
Yeah, so. You were missing out with your family, seeing your son. And that was the main motivator for coming into trucking. So what's the best personal dish that you can make?
Best personal dish I can make for myself.
I say, hey, cook me a meal, and you'll be like, this is the best one I can do.
Okay, so believe it or not, it's not out of my forte, is I make really good shrimp etouffee. Mm. Really, really good Creole shrimp etouffee. A lot of spice, a lot of seasoning. You just got to like Creole food. If you don't like Creole food, you're not going to like it. But I've had that almost on every menu that I've ever put out, and it's always been one of my top sellers.
You help define the menu?
When I worked in restaurants, yeah.
Yeah.
When I worked in restaurants, my menus 99.9% of the time were my ideas, my recipes, my concepts. And if it didn't sell, we took it off, replaced it. Like I said, that's why it's okay to fail. Sometimes you put things out there, people don't like it. You're like, okay, that doesn't work.
So the chef special—that's you.
You never call it the chef special, because a chef special, if you believe it or not, you go to a restaurant, you go to order the chef special, like chef specials, meatloaf sandwiches or whatever, right? That's usually the meatloaf from the day before that didn't sell, that they're cutting up and repurposing it for they can make money back. Mm. Or you walk in there and get like hamburger soup. It's all the stuff from like the ground beef stuff from the day before that they couldn't sell that they make hamburger soup out of. That's what a chef special is for. It's to repurpose whatever they didn't sell to make more money.
Wow, you're just busting the restaurant industry right now.
Yeah. It's people don't realize that though. Like when you walk in and you get like today's special, it's usually the food that didn't sell that they're trying to make money off instead of taking the loss. Mm. That's why it's always like $9 for like a steak dinner. And you're like, those steaks are about to go bad, aren't they? Yeah, that's normally the cause. People don't realize that.
So that shrimp dish, what is in that dish?
Rice, shrimp, a lot, like bell peppers, celery. So if you don't know what shrimp etouffee is, it's...
I don't.
So shrimp etouffee is Creole food. So it's shrimp in like a rich, spicy sauce.
Yeah.
And it has like tomatoes sometimes. Mm-hmm. It has like the cool thing about Creole food is there's a base. You need good white rice. You need good white rice. And you need like bell peppers and onions. Like you need the Holy Trinity of like celery, bell peppers, onions. It's called the Holy Trinity. Right, and that's the base flavor. And you need good Gulf shrimp, like really big Gulf shrimp. Besides that, everything else is based off you season with your heart and you season with your soul. And that's the cool thing about the whole Creole thing is it's you don't fall like it's 2 teaspoons of this. No, it's you go until it speaks to you. And if you like it super spicy, it's going to speak to you and tell you to make it spicy. And that's Creole food.
That's Creole food.
Mike, make me spicy.
Basically, like if you ever talk to Justin here at Nussbaum, he grew up in Louisiana.
Okay.
And his grandparents, that's how they would cook. Would literally, you just season with your heart. You season with your soul. You just literally just toss it in there and go, that's not bad, right? It's a little bit more. And that was it. And that was the cool thing. That's why you go to the South and no one's Creole food tastes the same.
Yeah.
No one's food down there ever tastes the same because everyone speaks different to them.
Yeah. Wanted to take a pit stop and ask this question about, you mentioned Gordon Ramsay that you applied.
I applied for a restaurant.
To work for Gordon Ramsay.
Failed horribly.
But that trying that out, that's a pretty tough application process, cooking for the man, Gordon
Ramsay himself. Yeah, you got to have some years of culinary experience. You got to, you know, like I said, not be afraid to fail. Because going to cook for him, there's a 99.9% chance you're going to fail.
Yeah.
You know, he's Gordon Ramsay. He's like the epiphany of like fine dining. Like that's what everyone knows of. But at the end of the day, the cool thing about even having a conversation with the guy, talking to him, even trying is, you know, what you see on TV is not really him. Hmm. And he's actually a really nice guy, really sweet. But his one thing that he always says is he's only mean to people that can't check their ego. You should never come in going, I know everything, because you don't. You always have room to grow. Mm-hmm. And he's mean to people that refuse to have that mindset. And if you walk in with like, I'm the best, I know everything, no one's better than me, he's going to try to knock you down a few pegs and make you realize you don't know everything. Mm-hmm. But if you walk in with an open mind and a willingness to learn, he's the nicest guy in the world. Mm-hmm.
So what was the process like cooking for Gordon Ramsay? Like, we try out?
Phone interview first. You send some concept recipes, menus over. Then they fly you out. And you're there for like 2 or 3 days. And, you know, they show you the kitchen. They tell you all the stuff. You don't get to tell them what to order or nothing. They just kind of show you the area you're going to be cooking in. And then they tell you, hey, you're cooking for, like I said, 8 people. You're like, who? And I'm like, I don't. 8 people, and that's all you're cooking for. You can cook for 3, you can cook for 2, you can cook for 1. It's never the same. And you're like, well, it's 8 people today. Okay, who am I cooking for? Any allergies? And then they'll give you a list of allergies, if there is any. Most of the time, there's not. And they're like, cool, have fun. And they just walk away, and you're in there by yourself.
Is their kitchen pretty nice?
Oh, it's gorgeous. It's, you have everything you could possibly dream of. You have sous vides, you have roasters. You have like double decker ovens. You have like 14 eye burners. You flat tops. You have French tops. You probably don't know what a French top is.
No,
That's hard to explain. Basically, if you have these big metal plates, and there's a direct flame underneath it, and that's the direct heat. But you can also take it and put it over to the side and still get heat. And that's okay. How you control your heat. There's no knobs to control high or low. You get it hot, and then you move the pan around. Like old French style. Like, go watch the old movie Ratatouille. Go watch the movie Ratatouille, right? And you see the top that he's cooking on.
Not the Pixar one?
You can watch the Pixar one. It is. And then you watch the movie, right? It's called Old French Top. And it's an old school cooktop. It's like the original flat top grill.
Okay.
And that's how you move things around. So, like, if you want to keep something warm, you move it over here to the side or whatever. And yeah. Yeah, it's cool. That's how I usually make my like demi-glaces and stuff like that.
So it sounds like really intimidating. You're cooking for Gordon himself and his wife.
His wife, kids, family members, his executives. You don't know who. You're literally just cooking for 8 people, 6 people, 5 people. That's all they tell you. Mm. And any allergies. And you're just like, have fun.
Yeah.
Because they want to see how you deal under pressure, how creative you can be. Because, you know, people like, well, you're cooking for Gordon today, they're going to, like, really focus on that. They don't want that. They want you to just know that every meal you're going to put out needs to be high-end.
Yeah.
And that's all they care about. They don't care if you're cooking for someone's 12-year-old kid. It still needs to be as if you're cooking for Gordon himself.
Yeah. Did he give you feedback in person?
The feedback I got was, like, that's where it comes down to, like, slow down. You know, you could tell that I was nervous. You could tell that I was scared. He goes, that's the mentality of like failing is it's okay to fail. You can fail. And those are probably that's why I always carry that with me, because I literally had someone like with his reputation telling me that it's cool. It is what it is. You tried, and that's all that matters. You gave it a try. And that's at the end of the day, that speaks volumes on the person you are. Is if you're, long as you're willing to try and face fear in the face, even if you might fail, speaks volumes on the type of person you are.
Hmm.
Yeah.
That's cool. Last thing before we move on. So you mentioned a $10,000 cake recipe.
Yeah.
So walk me through. You're actually pretty creative about making your own recipes, and you've sold a couple recipes. Mm-hmm. So what's that look like, making your own recipes that are very valuable? Apparently someone thought that
ego boosting. It makes you feel really, really good about yourself and kind of push yourself to do better. Mm-hmm. You're like, well, if I can make 10,000 off this one, how can I make 15,000?
Yeah.
How can I make 20,000?
So what was the recipe for?
It was a cake. It was a mimosa cake, a yellow mimosa cake with a citrus buttercream frosting and sugar pearls filled with mimosa gel. Yeah.
Wow.
It was a pain in the butt. But my sister helped me. I took my sister's original idea and I kind of adapted on it.
Yeah.
And that's the whole thing about culinary world is that's what a lot of that is taking what somebody else has done and go, I'm going to make that better.
Yeah.
And that's what it is.
Yeah. Just making it the next, tweak it a little bit, make it better. Any funny, unexpected stories from the kitchen that you'd like to share that you haven't shared yet?
So at the Teton National Park, we used to have a thing called Capture the Flag. And so Tetons, we had multiple restaurants and stuff. And we had a thing called Capture the Flag. It's where each kitchen would compete against each other, and like we'd have a pirate flag hanging up. And each kitchen would send like cooks over to kind of steal the pirate flag. And like you would like literally just like do weird games to like distract somebody while somebody ran in and grabbed it. And that was oddly fun. And it kind of like added a different twist to being at a being in the kitchen all day long, because we were in the kitchen for up to 16 hours a day, and it kind of just had this little fun banter back and forth of like who's a better kitchen and all this other stuff, and it was really really fun. Then I had a friend in there, his name, we nicknamed him Greasy, because he was cleaning the deep fryers and went to go put the new oil in and forgot to close the valve, and as he's pouring the new oil in, it just literally pours all over the ground. So his nickname became Greasy.
Oh, no. What an awful nickname.
It's an awful, but you know, he embraced it.
Okay.
Because, like I said, it's okay to fail. And he was like, that was a failure. That was a blunder. Hey. And he's like, he embraced it, and to this day, we literally still call him Greasy.
That's amazing. I'm glad he can laugh at it, because that's a great lesson to learn. To be able to take stuff and just laugh at it. Mistakes are going to happen.
You should always be able to laugh at yourself.
Don't be afraid of those mistakes, yeah.
You should always be able to laugh at yourself, because at the end of the day, you're your biggest critic. And if you're hard on yourself and you're too hard on yourself, you're going to stand in your own way. And if you fail and you're like, well, I can't do this no more. No, you just brush yourself off and get up, laugh about it, learn from it, and keep moving forward. Yeah.
The Capture the Flag in the kitchen was fun, too.
It was fun. Super fun. Super. We used to get creative on how to capture the flag.
So as a home cook for myself, what would you say? What's the one tip every home cook should know?
Patience. Never rush it. Always take your time. And the difference between cooking and baking is baking is precision. Cooking, like if you're cooking a regular meal, you can grow from a mistake. So you add too much garlic, too much whatever, you can actually turn that into something else. But the main goal is to take your time. Do not rush it. That's how you burn things. That's how you hurt yourself. That's how you mess up recipes. You skip steps, stuff like that. Yeah,
good. So then going from serving presidents and Congress to hauling freight, you said it was something that you grew up around it. What sparked that change to make that transition? Mainly your son?
Family. My wife. My wife missed me a lot when I was in the kitchen. I wasn't home a lot. I wasn't making a lot of money, and I was always in a negative mood. I was always stressed out because I never felt like I was doing enough. Mm-hmm. And then my wife told me about this thing called KC Great Jobs in Kansas City, where the owners of the Kansas City Royals will pay for you to go to school. And they paid for me to get my CDL. And I never thought I was going to end up in this field. And then I failed a couple times. Like I said, just go ahead and fail. I worked at Warner, and I ended up getting fired from Warner. And then I worked for Mom and Pop, and I didn't like that one very much. But now I'm here, and I'm oddly flourishing very well. I'm really good at what I do. And it's because I take a lot of the stuff that I've learned.
Yeah. What are some of those skills that you've learned in the kitchen that help you on the road?
Being neat and organized. Time management. Before we started this, I told you I've never been late to an appointment. And that's because time management. I'm never like always in a rush, like, oh my God, gotta go, 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 go. It's all right, cool. This is my appointment. I need to do this much. I figure out my marks on how far I need to get to make sure I make my appointment. Because at the end of the day, I know in the back of my mind, we are nothing but a service to these shippers and receivers. We are the middleman, we're the liaison. And Nussbaum's reputation rides on us drivers to make sure we make our appointments on time, that we're professional, that we're courteous. punctual and all that stuff. So I keep that in the back of my mind.
Yeah.
So I plan my whole entire route down to like where I need to stop, what time I need to wake up, what time I need, all this stuff. And that's, time management is a huge thing that I brought. And being super organized in my truck. If you literally lot in my truck right now, my truck super clean, super organized. Everything has its place, so nothing feels cluttered and overwhelming.
Yeah.
And that's a huge...
You're doing a good job. Just
I try.
No late so far.
Yeah.
No late deliveries. That's great. All been on time. And you've been a platinum driver since you've started here.
Yeah. I've been here for a minute now, and I've had a 700 scorecard the whole entire time I've been here.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm at a 700 evenly right now, but because I've had a couple of things I've had to learn to do better at. But
sure,
it's all about learning.
Yeah, it's about learning and wanting to learn. And so
you have to have a very open mind.
You understand the mission. It sounds like when you're sharing that, it's about supporting our customers and being the face of Nussbaum. You are what makes this happen. So. That's really cool. Seems like you get that. What was the hardest part about switching from being a chef to being over the road? Most challenging piece to that?
Missing my family. That was a huge thing. Like, I know I make more money now, but I don't have the opportunity to go home at the end of the night.
Yeah.
And that was the hugest change.
Here, in trucking now.
Yeah, in trucking.
You're home every 2 weeks.
I'm home every 2 weeks.
Yeah.
I'm home 3 days out of the month.
Mm.
And missing my family is probably the hardest thing. Cause like, and when I was a chef, I was tired, but I got to go home and, like, see my wife and, you know, hug her and tell her I love her and all this other stuff. But right now, it's literally a phone call or a text message.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, I know what I'm doing is... for them. So that's why I do it.
Yeah. That's cool. I mean, you've been running really hard, 3,000 miles a week. And
I try to get there. Like, highest one is almost 3,600 miles in a week.
Yeah.
I went to Portland, Oregon in like 2.5 days, and then from Portland, Oregon, back all the way to Iowa in another 2.5 days. And then I still had time on my clock and I ran even more.
Yeah. Yeah. And which is great. And I hope that you're able to find more time to maybe get that home time down a little. I mean, get it down to once a week or something eventually here. That'd be.
I like being out for 2 weeks.
You like being out?
I just miss my family at times.
Sure, I get that. There's a struggle there. So thanks for sharing that.
That's
So what's cooking on the road look like for you?
So in my truck, I have an air fryer. I have a roaster. I have a pot. I have a crock pot. I have an electric skillet. And on the road, so I've made everything from jambalaya on the road. I've made fried chicken on the road. I've made steak and eggs on the road. Best thing ever with like Justin, when me and him were team driving for my birthday one year at a truck stop on the catwalk of our truck. I made seared steak, roasted red potatoes, Cajun corn, and a chocolate cake. Ron had a truck stop outside.
How do you make a chocolate cake with
culinary skills? You literally put the cake mix in the pan, put it on very low heat, add a little bit of water, and let the steam cook the cake up.
Okay.
Yeah, you steam a cake up.
You steam a cake.
Mm-hmm.
All you really need
to make a cake in like a pan is literally steam. And you can literally let the bottom of it cook up a little bit and add a little bit of water to it. Like ice cubes, whatever, and the steam will help the rest of the cake rise up.
Yeah. Smart. Justin probably misses you.
Justin's diet now has literally gone back to like Chef Boyardee and like ramen noodles for the most part.
Poor guy.
Because on the truck, I would used to make like pancakes and eggs for breakfast. I would make French toast. I made pasta. I made tacos. I made steak. Like I literally said, if you see me at a truck stop, you can bring me over some meat, and I'm like, cool, I got you. And I will literally make you whatever you want. I was at a truck stop in Wyoming, and I sat outside of my truck, and I literally would just cook for drivers in the truck stop. Like, I'd rather give them a scratch-made meal instead of them walking inside and getting a Hardee's cheeseburger or a hot dog or something like that. Let me make you something that's healthier for you. Like, not super healthy, but better than eating that processed hot dog or that, you know, burger from like Hardee's or McDonald's.
Yeah. So what's the best kitchen appliance for cooking?
So there's a couple. At home, I love our Ninja air fryer. It's phenomenal. It's perfect. A KitchenAid mixer. I always need a KitchenAid mixer. I don't care what anyone says. I need my KitchenAid mixer. And a really good set of knives. You always need a good set of knives. And that's all you really need. You can do everything else. Like, I've literally cut up meat on a cardboard box. I don't need no cutting board. I'll do whatever. But, yeah. I need a good ninja air fryer. We also have a smoothie machine at home. Absolutely love that. And my wife wants the Ninja Creamy if we can make ice cream. Ooh. But, you know, that's neither.
Stay tuned. But air fryer is the key to success.
Air fryer is great.
I heard you can make salmon on that.
You can make salmon. You can make the one at home. It has a bake feature, so you can bake in it. I'm like, all right, cool, I guess. So
in the truck, it works well, air fryer?
You just got to idle the truck for a while because it pulls a lot of power. But, you know, you're only going to cook it for like 5-10 minutes. It is what it is. Mm-hmm. And that's it, yeah.
I ask this question a lot of drivers, and I love what I find out. What's the most interesting load that you've gotten from someone, picked up and something?
So I have a couple. So before coming to Nussbaum, I did flatbed. Mm-hmm. I absolutely love flatbed. But I had to figure out how to fit 6 Bobcat, you know, little backup, little trailer, little skid loaders, on a 48-foot trailer, because the company I worked for did not plan very well. And I magically did it, kept it regulations and stuff like that. That was cool. And then for that company as well, I loved it. It was a great thing because I got – both these are 2 free things. I hauled 43,000 pounds of Girl Scout cookies. Greatest thing in the world. They gave me free Girl Scout cookies when I made the delivery. And I was like, yes, Thin Mints. And then when I was team driving, me and Justin Barrett, who's also a driver here – we had to do a Red Bull delivery from, I think it was Phoenix, Arizona, to Detroit, Michigan. And we were team driving. We literally were there the next day. That's why my old company called us, like, Amazon delivery, because we were literally next day delivery.
One day with Mike.
Me and him did 10,000 miles in a week. Our truck never stopped. We went from Seattle, Washington, down to Miami, Florida, in like 2 days, literally just near on. Me and him sometimes joke about that.
Yeah.
But we did a Red Bull delivery, and when we showed up, because it was a blindside back in a very tight spot, they gave us free Red Bull. Can't be mad about this. Yeah. They gave us like $75 worth each of free Red Bull. Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
Do they do that for everyone?
No. We're like, yes.
That's a hard backing job.
It was a blindside back into a dock. So the dock would be like right here. I had a blindside back around a building and not hit the building and get into the dock. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I taught Justin a trick on that day. I was like, lift up the blinds, use the window to guide yourself in. Yeah.
That's cool. You brought Justin over from your last place.
Yeah. Too. Justin he's a great guy. He's, you know, we talk all the time. He's enjoying it here.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Takeaways. So I wanted to finish this episode off with some takeaways for our listeners. What advice would you give? And a lot of our drivers, I mentioned, have previous careers, switching industries. What advice would you give for someone thinking about a career change?
A career change?
Into trucking, out of trucking, just in general, what would you give to someone thinking about a career change?
Never let your nerves stand in the way. So if you always stand in your own way, if you let fear stop you from doing anything in life, you'll never grow. At the end of the day, you're going to be the only person that ever stops you from growing. And if you let yourself stand in the way, you'll never find growth, you'll never find peace, you'll never find happiness. And sometimes you just got to put caution to the wind and give everything a shot, and you might like it, you might not.
Yeah. Yeah.
At the end of the day, I literally believe that you're your biggest cheerleader. You're going to be your biggest supporter in life and everything. And you can be also be the biggest barrier in life. Mm-hmm. And you got to be able to advocate for yourself, mm-hmm. and believe in yourself,
yeah.
and push yourself to do better.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's cool. Thanks for the words of wisdom. Yeah. Not doing stuff out of fear, but out of love, mm-hmm. and a desire to do something.
A desire to learn. You should always have an open mind and, yeah. wanting to learn about other people's beliefs, lives, careers, everything. Mm-hmm. Never have a closed off mind. You should always be open to everybody. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Cool. Mike, thank you for being here and just sharing your life story. And there's so much, and I feel like we just kind of scratched the surface. So if you see Mike around, say, hey, can you cook me a meal? And then talk to him.
I will be glad to cook anybody a meal if they see me around. I tell people all the time, if you see me at a truck stop, knock on my door, I'll gladly cook you a meal. I have no problem with it. Yeah.
Yeah. That's good. Any shout outs you'd like to give or comments that you'd like to share? Pieces of advice.
I honestly, like, the one thing is, I like to say, I like to give out my DM Crystal a huge shout out, because she deals with me. I blow her phone up a lot about appointments and, like, where's my next load, all this other stuff. You know, Justin, he's, you know, he's learning a lot, and we always have jokes in the road, you know, and just mainly, like, right here from News Palm would be Crystal, my DM. Mm-hmm. Like, she's been great, and she's been like a huge supporter of me getting, you know, doing well. So
no, that's really cool.
Yeah. Besides that, that's it.
Yeah. Well, from your story, that I learned that we should not be afraid to fail, mm-hmm. to try stuff. Don't worry about the failure or be paralyzed with fear and thinking about transitions and try something new, and maybe you'll cook for the president too.
Should always try something new. Should always open your horizons to things new in life, and that's how you truly experience life. You have to break the norm. You can't always live in your normal situation. You have to break out of it every once in a while if you really want to experience life.
Mm. Yeah, that's cool. And that's how you got your start.
That's how I got my start in everything. Skateboarding as a kid, everything. I literally just said, you know what, I want to try it, and just through caution to win, and if I failed, well, I realized I failed and picked myself up, brushed myself off, and moved on.
Yeah.
Yep.
It's cool. Well, thanks for being here. Thank you to Daniel doing our audio and video. Thank you to our listeners for tuning in. We got lots of great content coming up, so stay tuned and stay purpose-driven and own it every moment.
Hi, everyone. This is CJ from Recruiting at Newsbaum, and I'd love to answer any questions you have about driving with us. Give us a call at 309-268-1199 or visit newsbaumjobs.com. Talk to you soon. You've been listening to Terminal Exchange, the official podcast of Newsbaum Transportation. If you're enjoying our content, please leave us a review. Your reviews help us spread the word about these important topics and invite more people into the conversation. You can rate and review us on your podcast app or visit us online at terminalexchange.org. New episodes arrive every other Tuesday, so be sure to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. You can also follow Newsbaum on your favorite social media platforms and be the first to know when new episodes are released. Thanks for listening. Until next time, own every moment and stay purpose-driven.